So with that, though, let's get started. And I would love to just welcome everyone to this week's Citizens Climate University. It's a weekly webinar program of Citizens Climate Lobbies that provides CCL supporters like you and I with access to in-depth training opportunities on topics related to climate change and effective climate advocacy. I'm your host, Brett Cease, and tonight's specific topic is going to be focused on using Dr. Schindel's new state-based climate policy health co-benefits tool. We're going to jump right into that in a little bit. At the end of the training, if we've done our job well, you'll walk away with the following three learning goals. Learn a little bit more about the amazing work that Dr. Drew Schindel and his research lab team are doing. You'll also be able to highlight the health and crop benefits of climate policies that result from cleaner air. A lot of that harmful air pollution being cut out of the overall emission stream. And then Dana is going to walk us through how to actually use Dr. Schindel's state level co-benefits website tool, where you can find it, how to manipulate it for your own state, and really use that information to present in your own lobby meetings, grass tops meetings, grassroots outreach, you name it. It's going to be a really helpful tool. So to take us through all of this, we have our wonderful speaker tonight. Dana Nucatelli is CCL's research coordinator, as well as the leader of our science policy network. He's an environmental scientist by training and also is a climate journalist and author of Climatology versus Pseudoscience, an excellent book. Dana has published 10 papers related to climate change in peer-reviewed journals, including three studies on the expert climate consensus. Fun update that you can ask him about during the Q&A is on a more recent update on that study that is emerging that I know he's really excited about. And you may have known Dana from his work on climate science for Skeptical Science, a prolific member of that team since 2010. Dana has written for The Guardian since 2013 and for Yale Climate Connection since 2018. So we're in for a real expert joining us tonight. We're so glad all of you can join us, and the floor is yours, Dana. Take it from here.
Cool. Thanks, Brett, for the intro. So we are going to be talking about some new research and a new tool by a team led by Drew Schindel, who is a climate scientist, a professor of earth science at Duke University. He's got a background in physics from UC Berkeley and Stony Brook. And then from 1995 to 2014, he was at the NASA Goddard Institute for Space Studies. And then he also was at Columbia, which is nearby, which is kind of common for like some of the top climate scientists, like James Hansen did that. Gavin Schmidt, who's now leading NASA GISS, does that, where they work at the NASA Goddard Institute. And then they also teach at Columbia, or they're affiliated with Columbia. So then he's done a lot of climate change modeling research. He's also done air quality research and research on the links between science and policy. In his long career, he's published over 250 peer-reviewed studies on these various subjects, and he's gotten a bunch of awards from Scientific American, NASA, the National Science Foundation, and EPA, for example. He was one of the lead authors on the fifth IPCC report, and on the 2018 IPCC special reports on the 1.5 degrees Celsius Paris targets. And then last summer, he testified to Congress as an expert on climate and air pollution health, which was the subject of this paper that we're gonna talk about. So those were his preliminary results that he was talking about. And then it took a while, he kind of updated that study that he was doing, which was about the, we call them the co-benefits of reducing air pollution when you implement climate policies that phase out dirty fossil fuels and the health benefits of that. So since last summer, he's been updating now with the latest climate models, and then it takes a while to go through the peer review process, so the paper was just recently published. So this is the study published in November in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, which is a very prestigious journal, called The Temporal and Spatial Distribution of Health, Labor, and Crop Benefits of Climate Change Mitigation in the United States. So you can see, oops, there we go. So Drew Schindel was the lead author. He also had Gavin Schmidt on there, who I mentioned is like the new James Hansen. He's the new lead director of the NASA Goddard Institute for Space Studies. So it's a very prestigious journal and very prestigious authors. So it's a very reliable paper. It's a good thing to reference. It's good because it's in Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences by these like top tier climate scientists. So just as a general overview before we get into the state-based results, Basically, what they found was that if we in the United States implement climate policies that phase out dirty fossil fuels in line with the Paris Agreement's targets, then over the next 50 years in the US, we will avoid 4.5 million premature deaths from people breathing dirty air, 1.4 million hospitalizations and emergency room visits from things like asthma and bronchitis. Again, these impacts of breathing dirty air, 300 million lost work days from people getting too sick to work because of air pollution, 1.7 million incidences of dementia, because it turns out dementia is linked to breathing dirty air. That's at least one contributor to dementia, and 440 million tons of crop losses are avoided because some air pollutants are bad for crop productivity. So we're going to go into the details on that state by state. So how I mentioned, we call these the co-benefits, that when we burn fossil fuels, we're not only putting greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, we're also putting these other pollutants, particulate matter and ozone, pollutants that create particulate matter and ozone, which have all kinds of bad impacts on health and crops. So for example, when we put ozone in the air, that can aggravate lung diseases like asthma and emphysema. When we put PM2.5, this small particulate matter, into the atmosphere, that can cause premature death if people have heart problems or lung disease, and can also aggravate asthma. So really bad to breathe this stuff. So combined, the estimate is that ozone and PM2.5 cause 250,000 premature deaths in the US annually, and a whole bunch of lost work days too. And so ozone pollution also turns out to hamper crop productivity. The more ozone pollution there is, the less productive crops tend to be. And then, as I mentioned, there seems to be this link. This is kind of relatively new health research, but there seems to be a link that when there's more PM2.5, that contributes to more incidences of dementia. And so cleaning up the air is also good for reducing that impact. And then there's one important aspect of this research that if you look at kind of the big headlines associated with it, it was talking about these really huge economic benefits of reducing air pollution. And most of that was associated with kind of the value of these avoided premature deaths. And the way scientists measure those economic effects is they'd use this thing called the value of a statistical life. So like some of these benefits that we're seeing, like when people don't have lost work days, when crop yields do better, when healthcare costs decrease, those are kind of economic benefits that we can measure very easily because those are direct benefits. It's like there's more crops and so there's more stuff to sell, or there's like fewer people going into the healthcare system. But avoiding premature deaths, it's a very hard thing to quantify in terms of dollars, because it's like, well, you're avoiding a death, but what is that worth exactly? And I mean, avoiding a premature death has, of course, a huge benefit just in and of itself. But the problem is when we're doing these like cost-benefit analyses of what's the cost of a climate policy versus what the benefits of the climate policy, that is in dollar terms. And so if you're gonna include the value of avoiding premature deaths in these cost benefit analyses, then you have to somehow put a dollar value on it. So basically the way that scientists do this is they do kind of surveys of people and ask them how much they, for example, one way to do it is how much they'll be willing to pay to reduce their risk of death in a given year. And then you kind of statistically calculate then the value of that. And so when you do that, it turns out people really put a high value on not dying, which makes sense. I certainly do. And so the resulting numbers tend to be very big. So the trick is that it's a subjective value. It's like, this is what I value. It's like reducing my risk of dying or, you know, having a premature death. So it's not the same as like the direct boost to the economy that you get from, you know, more crop yields or fewer lost work days. So those are like direct economic benefits, whereas the value of a statistical life and the value that we're putting on this reduced risk of premature death is not the same direct economic benefit. It's more about what we value, how much we value our a reduced risk of death. So you have to be very careful that you're not putting these numbers kind of in the same box, that you're being clear about what you're talking about when you're talking about these economic benefits. So I'll kind of go through how I communicate these numbers here in a bit. So this is an example of how I put these numbers into a presentation I did about California and climate benefits and impacts of climate policy in California specifically. So I used this tool that we're going to look at in a minute, and I looked at specifically what the benefits were for California over the next 20 years of a climate policy that is consistent with the Paris target. And so I put the numbers in here. So specifically in California, we would avoid 150,000 premature deaths from air pollution over the next 20 years if we implement these climate policies valued at $1.5 trillion. And then there's these other ones, 7.6 million fewer lost workdays worth $1.4 billion in California, 44,000 fewer cases of dementia, increase in wheat and corn production of a certain amount by $400 million and $670 million. So the way I'm careful about this is I say, like, these are the avoided premature deaths, and they are valued at $1.5 trillion by Californians extending their lives, avoiding these premature deaths. So it's not the same as, like, lost work days are worth $1.4 billion and the increased wheat production is worth $400 million, but the avoided premature deaths are valued at $1.5 trillion. So it's important to be careful about that. It's also an option if you're not comfortable talking about this economic value of avoided premature deaths, you could just focus on the 150,000 avoided premature deaths themselves and just leave it at that. It's up to you, whatever you're comfortable with, because again, it's a tricky thing to, like, talking about the value of a life, because, you know, that's just a challenging thing. So this is the page of the tool. And then on this left side, what you want to do if you're going, so this is just like a little intro text, and then you go to the state level results on the left, and that takes you to the tool itself. So there's some explaining text here on the top, where it talks about you select the scenario that you want to look at, the years you want to compare, and the specific impact you want to view with these three bars. And then there's like two different ones. So if you want to compare two different scenarios side by side, you can do one on the left and one on the right, and then you can make a comparison. Or if you just want to look at one scenario, you can just use one or the other. So the scenarios we're looking at, they're called SSPs, which are shared socioeconomic pathways, which are basically like scenarios that the IPCC has come up with. To kind of look at different possible pathways that the international community could possibly go through in the future. And so there's like five of these. It's not super, super important to understand these, but basically this one is called SSP1. It's kind of like the best case scenario where all the governments in the world kind of take a green path and a sustainable path and implement policies where basically it's clear that they are concerned about climate change and environmental problems, and they kind of adjust their policies accordingly, which is what we would like to see them do, and take climate change seriously and act accordingly. And then there's SSP2 is the next one, which is kind of like, basically we keep doing in the future what we're doing now, which is kind of this kind of very gradual, slow shift towards clean energy, but we're not super, super into climate policy. So it's kind of a following through with where we're going now. SSP3 is like kind of a nationalist, like every country kind of looks out for themselves rather than trying to just, you know, achieve this global sustainability. So it's more of a kind of nationalistic, competitive in between countries type of scenario. SSP4 is like if there's very high inequality, again, because countries are kind of looking out for themselves, and so they increase inequality. And SSP5 is kind of worst case, we end up using lots and lots of fossil fuels, and bad stuff happens as a result, as you would expect. So that's kind of just the SSPs. Again, that's not super, super important to understand. So in these scenarios, there's two kind of aspects. There's the SSPs, and then there's a number after them. And the number after them is If anybody's familiar with the previous scenarios IPCC used, they used what are called RCPs, representative concentration pathways, which is basically like they're looking at the eventual global energy imbalance, the difference between incoming and outgoing energy, because the bigger that imbalance is, the bigger global warming ends up being. And so the bigger that number is, the worse it is for us, because the worse warming we end up seeing in the future. So for example, the very first one in this pull down bar is called SSP1 1.9, so that's the smallest number, and it's a SSP1, which means it's one of those like green scenarios. This is like our best case scenario. This is a path that's consistent with the Paris 1.5 degree Celsius target. So if the US were to take enough policies to get in line with the 1.5 degree Celsius target, then SSP1 1.9 would be the relevant scenario you want to look at. The one that I look at is SSP1 2.6. So again, that's SSP1 means we're like trying to be green and climate conscious. And the 2.6 number, that is a scenario that's consistent with the Paris 2 degrees Celsius pathway. So basically what the United States does in that scenario is enough to do our share of the Paris Agreement, meeting at least the 2 degrees Celsius target. And that's basically the scenario that we're on track with right now. And a good resource to explain that is the Climate Action Tracker. So if you go to climateactiontracker.org, Brett's got a link to that, and you can go to the USA page. And it kind of shows like where we're headed. So like based on our domestic target, so the target that we set, which is trying to get to 50% below 2005 levels by 2030 and net zero by 2050, that is basically in line according to these guys at Climate Action Tracker with a 2 degrees Celsius eventual global warming scenario. If everybody were to act the same way we're acting, we would get about 2 degrees Celsius. So that's the one I like to compare. Because basically that's kind of where we're headed if we meet our 50% by 2030 target. So that's basically what we're trying to do. So I think that's a good scenario to use for comparison. And then what you're comparing to is this one that's called SSP3 7.0, which is basically a world in which we get close to 4 degrees Celsius global warming eventually. Some people might potentially take issue with that because it's, you know, it's tough to decide what you consider a business as usual scenario, because like there's like the policies we have in place now. There's like what happens if we backtrack and undo some of the current policies by like a future climate unfriendly administration. You know, what if we do something better? So it's what do you define as business as usual is kind of a tricky thing. So in this tool, they're basically saying business as usual is this SSP3 7.0 that gets us to close, like the equivalent of if everybody acted like the US did, we would get close to 4 degrees Celsius warming. If you look at a climate action tracker again, according to them, our current policies will get us to close to a 3 degrees Celsius world. And so, you know, I don't think anybody's probably going to get into the weeds with this and complain that you're using the wrong scenario. But, you know, if somebody does, or if you prefer, you can choose a different scenario to compare to. And like, probably the best one would be this. The one that ends in 6.0, because the one that ends in 6.0, SSP4 6.0, is basically consistent with about 3 degrees Celsius warming. So instead of just looking at SSP1 2.6, you could compare that to this scenario on the right and take the difference between these two, because what we're looking at here, so then let me slow down a little bit. So then you choose the year. So that's choosing the scenario that you want to consider. So in this one, I'm saying I'm choosing SSP1 2.6. So I'm considering a scenario in which the US's actions are consistent with the Paris targets, meaning that we're basically getting 50% emissions cuts by 2030, net zero by 2050. So that's a scenario I want to look at. And then the year I usually want to look at, you can pick a specific year, or you can pick, there's a couple of cumulative options. And I usually like to look at the 2020 to 2040 cumulative, because that's telling me what are these health benefits and crop benefits over the next 20 years totaled up, cumulative, if we take this path towards meeting our targets. And then the third one is you can choose all the different impacts that are in the study. So there's like deaths from ozone pollution, deaths from PM2.5 pollution, there's deaths from heat exposure, but that one's mostly towards the end of the century. So it's not super useful because basically the scenarios don't diverge very much based on what we do now until later in the century. And so it's not a super, so like right now you're saying it doesn't even show me anything for 2020 to 2040, because there's no difference between different scenarios based on what we do today in terms of climate policy for heat deaths. Because heat deaths are all going to change like as temperatures slow down in the second half of the century, but the first 20 years doesn't make any difference. So, but it does make a big difference in terms of ozone exposure and PM2.5 exposure, because those, we're phasing out those pollutants immediately. As soon as you start phasing out fossil fuels, those pollutants in the air start to decrease. And so they have this immediate impact on health and crops and things like that. And that's kind of the important point to take home from this paper, is that these health benefits we see from climate policy immediately, whereas the climate benefits of climate policy, like reduced heat deaths, reduced extreme weather events, we don't see those until like several decades in the future, because like we've all got all this warming locked in that's not going to change because it's based on the carbon pollution we put in the atmosphere in the past. And so it takes time for those to basically react to, respond to the changes in policy today. And so when we talk about like reducing these, you know, heat deaths and extreme weather deaths, we're asking people to make decisions based on improving people's lives in the future, which is a very good thing to do. Like they should do that. But, you know, sometimes people are a little self-centered. They want to know what the benefit is that for them, like right now, the benefit right now is these, you know, reduced air pollution co-benefits. So for example, let's look at New York, for example. So this is a scenario where if we meet the Paris targets in the US over the next 20 years, we want to know how many deaths are avoided due to this reduced PM2.5. So then you take your mouse, you hover over New York, and it says 62,723 avoided premature PM2.5 deaths over the next 20 years, specifically in New York. And then usually what I'll do is I'll combine ozone and PM2.5, just because then you can say the avoided deaths due to air pollution, rather than saying the avoided deaths due to ozone and the avoided deaths due to PM2.5, I just put them together and I say the avoided deaths due to reduced air pollution. Then you take the ozone premature deaths avoided, which in New York is 57,000. You add them up to the with the PM2.5, and you have a total avoided premature deaths count over the next 20 years in New York if we meet the Paris targets in the US. So there's some other ones in here. You can also, if you want to just compare between states, for example, you can look at the per million people. So basically like a per capita, oops, but you don't want to do that. Pick a certain year. No, it's not working. There we go. So you can see kind of like, you know, which regions benefit the most per person, but which basically shows you like which regions have the most PM2.5 per person pollution. So that's just kind of interesting, but it's harder to put into like a presentation. It's kind of an interesting piece of information. So there's some other specific health impacts, like avoiding bronchitis in adults, avoiding cardiovascular hospital admissions for adults or for seniors. So things like that, avoiding asthma emergency room visits, but these tend to be smaller numbers. So if I'm giving a presentation, I want to show like the biggest impacts. And so I usually won't use these like smaller ones. But you know, it depends on what you're using this for, what your audience is, who you're talking to. Like maybe you're talking to health experts who are particularly interested in how many asthma emergency room visits you're going to avoid. So in that case, you do the same thing. You choose whatever year you want. You pick that one. You go to whatever state you want. You hover over it. You see the number. That gives you the number of avoided asthma emergency room visits in Illinois over the next 20 years, for example, if we implement these climate policies that phase out fossil fuels and air pollution. So there's, you know, a lot of good ones. There's like, if you wanted to look specifically at child asthma hospital admissions, how many of those you're avoiding, you can look at that one. Again, one I use is dementia, because those tend to be big numbers. We're avoiding a lot of cases of dementia by phasing out this fossil fuel air pollution. So I tend to use that one just because it's a nice big number and it makes a good case for the immediate benefits of climate policies. Work lost days is another big one. You can see there's a big number for the number of lost work days that we're avoiding by phasing out this pollution. And if you look down at the map, you can see like basically the darker the green it is, the bigger the number is for that state. And usually, you know, it's the big population states get the darkest because they get the most people. So like California, New York tend to be the biggest just because they have the most people. But, you know, there still could potentially be a big number in the whiter states here just because like they have fewer people than California or New York, but they still could have potentially big impacts. And then another one that I look at is these yield changes for various crops. In this particular study, like there's only so much that they can include in the study. So they just kind of include the big staple crops, wheat, rice, corn, soybeans. And yeah, those are the four. And I usually look at wheat. It depends on the state, of course, because it depends on what the big crops are in that state. But usually wheat, corn, and soybeans are the big ones. Rice, there aren't a whole lot of states in the US that produce rice, like California is kind of the big one. And even them, it's like, it's not a big number. So I usually don't use rice, but I usually, depending again on the state, soybeans is a good one because soybeans are very valuable. And so this tool both gives you the yield loss and it also gives you the economic benefit, the economic value of that yield loss. So if you go scroll down, you can see like the economic value of soybean yield loss for each state. So you can do both those things, both the quantity lost and the economic value of that avoided loss of soybeans. And then, so up here toward the top, it gives the units for each of these different impacts. So when you're looking at lost work days, it's in days, the number that they give you over here, that's number of days. The crops are tricky because they give you kilotons of crops. And I personally don't find that super useful. Because like, that's not what we measure normally crops in. And so what I do is like, I look up, you just Google like convert tons of wheat to bushels, for example. And then you can get like a website that'll give you that conversion. And remember, this is not tons. So this is thousands of tons. So if I look at the yield loss of wheat for, let's say Montana, it's over the next 20 years, it's 928,000 tons of wheat. So then you have to look up the conversion between tons of wheat and, well, I use bushels because that's kind of like what farmers use. So I'd convert from tons to bushels and make sure you bear in mind that it's thousands of tons and be careful with that conversion. So that one's a little bit tricky, but if you're talking to some group that's very interested in agriculture or, you know, the economic importance of agriculture in the state, and that's a really good impact to talk about is these, you know, potentially avoided lost crop yields. And then for these ones that are in dollars, so if you look at the lost labor hours, that's just in dollars. If you look at the crop value, which we can look at the economic value of wheat loss, for example, and let's say you go to Montana and it says 195,000. That is in thousands of dollars. So you actually have to multiply it by 1,000. So when it says 194,807, that's actually $194 million because you have to multiply by 1,000. So you have to be careful with that, that there's like different funky units in here a little bit. So just be careful, make sure you look at kind of the key up here to see like what that specific impact you're looking at, what the units are. So anytime any of the crops, you're basically multiplying this number by 1,000. So anytime it says 100,000, it's actually 100 million. And then the deaths, again, because the value of deaths is so high, if we look at, let me see if I can find that one, the value of avoided deaths due to PM2.5 exposure. So if we go to, say, Washington, and it says 165,000, that is actually in millions of dollars. So that is actually, I'm doing the math right, $165 billion, I believe. So anyway, just take that number and you multiply it by $1 million, and that gives you the actual number. I think I did that right. Or it might be 165. I think it's $165 billion. So that's kind of how you use it. And just again, just be careful about what the units are. You just have to look up here at the key. And again, I always use this 2.6, but there are a whole bunch of different scenarios in here in case you want to compare. So like 4.5 is consistent with a little bit less than a 3 degrees Celsius world. In case you want to look at that scenario, there's a few different ones. Just you can look up these different SSPs or these different, numbers at the end of the SSP just to see like what scenario you're looking at. But what we're looking at is US policy that is consistent with meeting this particular scenario. So that's why I like to look at the 2.6 scenario, because I know that scenario is a 2 degrees Celsius world. And I know the US is consistent with that in our 50% by 2030 and our net zero by 2050 targets. So that's just a simple one to use, is this 2.6. That's kind of what we're aiming for. And so it's a good scenario to compare to. So that was a lot of stuff to cover in a short period of time. And it's kind of a complicated tool. And so one thing I should probably mention, again, this is the US total up here. So if you don't want to look at the state, but you want to look at the US total, then you just look at this number up here. This is like what we're looking at right here is for the United States over the next 20 years in a meeting the Paris target scenario, how much do we value the avoided premature deaths from PM2.5 exposure? So you can look at the individual states by hovering over them with your mouse, or you can look at the overall nationwide number by looking at this number in the box, and then make sure you look at the units, right? So this is it's 7 million times a million. So it's $7 trillion, if I'm getting that right, for the United States as a whole. So I'm going to stop there.
Excellent. Well, with that, I know that we're at time. It is such an honor to have you here, Dana. Thank you so much for walking us through tonight's training. We hope each of you found it useful, motivating, and empowering. And we look forward to hearing how you are going to take use of it in your own preparation and planning with your own local teams. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, Dana. Thanks, Brett.
Thanks, Dana. Thanks, Brett.
Bye-bye. Thank you all.
See you.
Bye, Connie.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Citizens Climate Lobby's training program. You can tune into more episodes anywhere podcasts are available. Inspired by what you heard today? Join Citizens Climate Lobby to advocate for bipartisan climate solutions. Go to community.citizensclimate.org to find more trainings, resources, your local chapter, national action teams, discussion forums, and more. Be sure to like our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Citizens Climate. We also invite all of our listeners to subscribe to our YouTube channel for more inspiration. And together, we are creating the political will for a livable world.